This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving around and around and around. I'm not heading home just yet. I'm gonna turn down the air conditioner. I am in costume, and so usually I'm gonna adjust this just a little bit here. There we go. Usually I run the air conditioner pretty hot, not hot, but pretty strongly I run it when I'm in costume, and that gets me cooled down when I'm traveling from place to place, and then, you know, kind of helps a little bit when I'm indoors and talking to people and doing that sort of thing. So I just finished a walk with a friend, but we were outside, and it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day outside. The sun is out. It's not too bad from a temperature perspective. Temperature is doink, doink, doink. Whoa, 29. Really? I don't think it's 29. I don't think these things are very accurate. It sure doesn't feel like it's 29. It feels like it's maybe mid-40s, 45-ish, 50-ish, somewhere in there. Sun is out, though. It's a beautiful day. It's not raining. It's just spectacular. And so I was out walking with a buddy. It is a Good Friday. Good Friday. Black Friday was yesterday. And so it's just a little Christmas outfit, but, you know, people seem to enjoy that. And this year, we need a little Christmas this year. So, people are pretty happy about the fact that Christmas is coming. We're hoping things are going to kind of calm down a little bit, you know, and I think people are thinking that, oh, if we can just get through the next few weeks, then we'll be through 2020. But I think there are some things in 2020 that are going to follow us into 2021, unfortunately. But the solution is always the same. The solution is what it has always been. That is love your neighbor. All is well. Had a good week at work. Got accomplished what I wanted to get accomplished this week, which was good. I'm getting ready to switch projects. We had a big project that kind of fell out of the sky unexpectedly. But when that happens, you just run all the timelines and say, okay, here we go. Is this what you want to do? And if the bosses say, yes, that's what we want to do, then you say, yep, that's what we're doing. So I'll be launching into that, probably this next week. And I had kind of a little breather for a week, week and a half while I was finishing getting the last project deployed and kind of dusting up a few things there, polishing. And I had just enough time that I thought I could hop back on another project and get it to a good stopping place. And I was able to do that. So yay. So that's good. Writing is going fine. I just finished putting in all of the corrections that I'd gotten from the beta readers. And so I'm getting ready to, I need to have a couple of conversations with some friends, and then I'm getting ready to do my final read through on that. So I think I'm in pretty good shape. Final read through will take me a couple of weeks. Then I'll build some files, and then we'll go from there. So last week, costume day, was National Absurdity Day. Man, I had made a costume that was basically a just big puff of tulle. I had a big tulle skirt that I had put out, hot pink tulle skirt that I had made that was, you know, just this big poof. And then I had it wasn't really a bolero top, but it was kind of cut similar to like a bolero type top would be, except it was all stuffed with tulle. Little tulle strips, so it was like this big, you know, poofy thing. Looked like a big loofah or something. And then I had a flamingo hat and a flamingo parasol, and people got a big kick out of it. Had no idea that flamingos were as popular as they are. And I had developed a pose, a fashion pose for it, so when people would take my picture, I would put my put my little parasol. The parasol was actually freestanding. It had like a little tri-foot on it, like a bird's foot. So you could just drop the parasol down to the ground and it would stand up. And then I'd put my finger on the flamingo head and strike my pose. And everybody got a big kick out of that. So that was fun. Lots of smiles. Lots of really good things. Good things. So I've told this story on... I told this story on the reaction videos, but still, it's just, wow. I'm getting ready to check out of Walmart, and I get kind of checked out, and there's people coming, and I'm moving away from the checkout lines, and there's people, and we're taking pictures, and I see this lady making a beeline for me. She has really short hair. She comes up and she said, "I just got all my hair cut off because I'm starting cancer treatments, and you have made my day." And, you know, and then she said, "And now I have to pee." So she ran off. But I thought, wow, I'm not going to let this one go. So I kind of followed over to the bathrooms. We were taking some more pictures, doing that kind of stuff. She came out and she smiled again. She said, "Again, you've made my day." And I said, "Hey, let me pray with you." So she said, "Okay." So we stood there by the Walmart checkouts and we prayed together. And I blessed her and blessed her with life and health and perseverance and strength and all those good things, you know. So, I mean, that's like, wow. It's, you have an opportunity. You know, that costume took hours and hours to make. But it was well spent. Time well spent for that moment. Didn't have anything like that this week, but you know what? That's okay. You know, all I can do is just put together costumes and be pleasant, be energetic, bring some smiles. We're good. So that was good. Now I'm working on Monkey Day right now. So I knew I had this week taken care of. I have next week taken care of, which is International Day of the Ninja. The next week is National Monkey Day, International Monkey Day, World Monkey Day. It's like Monkey Day. So that'll be fun. I love monkeys. So that's all going fine. Life is good. We had a lovely Thanksgiving. Had some friends over. We masked up while we were playing games and then tried to socially distance a little bit while we were having our meal. And so it was lovely. It was just lovely. Had a real good day yesterday going around in my little Christmas outfit and saying hello to people. And so all of that was good as well. Right now I'm running over to Hobby Lobby because I need a big bottle of Hunter Green poster paint. But I will go get some Hunter Green poster paint, and then I've got to head to Walmart and then home, and then we'll start doing some videos, get those recorded, get those uploaded, and then I'll see if I can get in touch with my friends and have a few conversations there. So the rest of the day is just going to be spent editing and getting my read-through started, that kind of stuff. Hello. I just turned, and I turned a little fast. I'm okay. There were some cars coming, and I made a decision. But it's fine. It's fine. This week, I had come across an article. And it's just, again, is one of these third wave of science articles. We've talked about third wave articles before, what I call the third wave of science. And the first wave, just to recap real quickly, is strictly observational science, when you're just looking at the world, you know, you're not really getting much deeper than that. So you've got fairly primitive approaches to science where you're just looking and going, I wonder how that works. You know, you're just looking at a tree, you're just looking at an animal, but that's all you're doing. And you're maybe drawing pictures of them, or you're making little clay models of them, and you're saying, oh, look at that, that's interesting, you know. But you're not really comprehending much more than that. And, it's coming somewhere, but I'm stopped at a stoplight, and I have no place I can go. I heard a siren there for a minute, but now I've gone with the other direction. Okay. You know, man tends to allow the existence of a higher being at that point because God doesn't seem very far away. you know, I drew this picture, I just don't know how to make it come to life, but that can't be that hard, wink, wink. You know, I made this clay model, but I just can't bring it to life, but that can't be that hard, wink, wink. You know, that's kind of the first wave. The second wave is when you start tearing things apart and you do bone and ligament and joint and things get more and more complicated and you do some investigations and you find about chemical reactions and you find and things get harder and things get more difficult and more confusing and how does this all work? How could it come about? And at that point, God becomes a little more intimidating. Because obviously God has all these capabilities that we just don't. And so then man starts pushing God away because it makes him feel inferior. And then everything has to be natural. Everything has to just kind of stumble in. And then in the third wave of science, of course, what happens is you keep discovering that things are more and more balanced. Things are more and more complicated. It doesn't matter how far down you go, they are increasingly complicated, that everything is this fine-tuned balance that there is no reason for. This fine-tuned balance just exists. And some people say, well, if it didn't exist, we couldn't be here. The anthropic principle. Anthropic principle, I think that is. And so you get into these types of things, but they become increasingly dissatisfying, that you just get to the point where this just doesn't seem like this is an adequate explanation, that things just stumbled together by themselves. We aren't there yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there. We just wait, because eventually somebody's going to say, you know, some sort of intelligence must have put all this together. Must have. And I came across this article that I consider creeping into that whole third wave of science, and the name of the article is Intelligent Life Really Can't Exist Elsewhere. And when I saw that, I went, oh, that looks interesting. So went ahead and pulled up the article and printed it out, and it is, you know, yet another statistical study that kind of looks back at the whole genre of the Drake equation. You know, years and years ago, there was the start of the Drake equation that is it possible? I'm getting hit in the face here with some cold air. I'm going to do this. Let me just do this. You know, how likely is it that there's life on other planets? How likely is it that there's intelligent life? You know, yada, yada, yada. And there was this whole equation where they said, okay, well, how many stars are there? How many stars actually have planets? How many stars actually have planets that are in the habitable zones? You know, blah, 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 blah. Well, there's so many stars in the universe that no matter pretty much anything that you plug into those things, you know, you're going to come up with, well, you know, there's probably habitable planets out there. And then the question is, well, okay, so if there's habitable planets out there, then how likely is it that those habitable planets can develop life? And then how likely is it that they can develop intelligent life? So you run all those formulas, and invariably you have enough planets and stars and things out there that somebody ends up saying, well, see, obviously there's like tons and tons of intelligence out there. The problem is we don't see any of it. We don't pick up any signals. We got nothing that there's any indication. So this particular article starts off by saying, cosmic statisticians say the likelihood of life evolving on Earth is even less than we thought. Analysis suggests individual steps in evolution were more likely to take longer than Earth's existence. Oh, somebody's running the math. The scientists say that this research is designed to give future researchers a foundation. So in a newly published research from Oxford University's Future of Humanity Institute, scientists study the likelihood of key times for evolution on Earth, of life on Earth, and conclude that it will be virtually impossible for that life to evolve the same way somewhere else. Another paragraph says, for decades, scientists and even philosophers have chased many explanations for the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox: in an infinitely big universe, Can we be the only intelligent life? And if we aren't, where is everybody? That's the Fermi paradox. So these scientists say, quote, the fact that eukaryotic life took over a billion years to emerge from prokaryotic precursors suggests that it is far less probable than the development of multicellular life, which is thought to have originated independently over 40 times. The researchers continue, the early emergence of abiogenesis is one example that is frequently cited as evidence that simple life must be fairly common through the universe. By using the timing of evolutionary transitions to estimate the rates of transition, we can derive information about the likelihood of a given transition, even if it occurred only once in Earth's history. The problem is they went through and they did all this new stuff, and they started looking at how long would it take to get from ooze to eukaryotes, for example, from asexual reproduction to sexual reproduction, you know, blah, 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 blah. And there's all these stages that you have to get through. And once they ran all those numbers, he said, it just gets to be almost impossible. So they said, first, we win the lottery for surface temperature and protection from spaceborne dangers. Second, we win the lottery from the presence of building, for the presence of the building blocks of life. Third, we win the lottery for the right location of the right building blocks. That was before anything like the most primitive single cell has even emerged. Using some information we do know, like the age of the Earth and the expected end of its habitable lifetime due to the expanding heat radius of our sun, these researchers have turned evolutionary transitions into a series of existential scratch-off tickets. And the problem is when you pile them all up, when you pile them all up and say all of these things would have had to happen by the time you get them all piled up, according to the article, it's like longer than the Earth has even existed. So they have concluded that if it was all by chance, that it probably was wild enough that it's only happened once. Okay, well, that's fine. So we're to that point now. And, of course, the only way out of that, then, if all the statistics seem true, the only way out of that, the next step beyond that, you can just say, well, we're the only ones and that's it, and it's just, or the next step out is to say, well, there was actually some sort of a designer, that it didn't start here, it started someplace else. And that has been floated as well. That someone planted it here, or that it floated here from somewhere, blah, 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 blah. So it's going to be really interesting to see where we go. This is just, for me, another one of those little steps. Another step, another step, another step, where somebody says, okay, okay, well, okay. And we just keep inching forward. I do firmly believe that we'll get to the place where the complexity, the level of complexity, will be so enormously high that there's going to be people that'll just throw up their hands and say, you know, it's just, it had to be designed in some way. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to Hobby Lobby, and eventually I'm going to make it home. Merry Christmas, everyone.